The Sefer told us Yankov Yosef from Rabbi Yankov Yosef HaKohen of Pulnoa, one of the most eminent Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, and a Sefer which quotes the Baal Shem Tov extensively, there is another very, very interesting quote. And this is a quote from a woman from the community of Mezhebish who is quoted as saying, the Jewish people have done well and have chosen well when they chose Hashem as their God. But Hashem too has selected well by choosing Israel as his very special nation. For even the lowly Five-ish was Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, even the lowly Five-ish consecrated God's holy name. Who was this Five-ish, and how he consecrated God's name is the tale of the Baal Shem Tov, which we will now be telling in this installment, and God willing, the next. There once lived in the vicinity of Mezhebush a fabulously wealthy man who had an only daughter. When the time came for her to be married, her father approached a local Rosh Yeshiva, the dean of a Torah academy, in search of a likely candidate. The Rosh Yeshiva suggested one young student who was blessed with a brilliant mind and who also possessed admirable character traits as well. The father was a learned man, and he desired to converse with the young man himself to see whether this potential chosen would be fit for his bas yechida, for his only daughter. After having spoken to the young man, the father was duly impressed and later asked the Rosh Yeshiva to propose the match to the young man whose name was Five-ish. The father of the girl guaranteed a substantial nadin, a substantial dowry, and promised to support his son-in-law for the rest of his days so that he might be free to pursue the study of Torah without interruption. Five-ish was pleased with these conditions and agreed to the match. The wedding took place after several months, and the young couple went to live near the girl's home. Five-ish continued studying Torah, while his father-in-law continued to manage his business, providing for his daughter and for Five-ish as he had promised. Five-ish, who was clever and sharp, found favor among the townspeople, and they began coming to him with their various problems. Many years passed, and two daughters were born to Five-ish and his wife. The years claimed their toll, and the rich man felt that he no longer could shoulder alone the burden of his business. And so it was that one day, while discussing the future with his wife offered him the following suggestion. She said to him, "My husband, you are already old. You cannot continue devoting the same attention to your business as in the past, for you simply don't have the koiches, the strength that you used to have. Is it not true that your laborers are taking advantage of you and trying to cheat you at every occasion because you can't oversee the business as you did in the past? You simply cannot continue this way indefinitely," his wife told Five-ish. Five-ish's father-in-law, "you have children and grandchildren to support, and we too must be provided for our old age. If you take my suggestion, I would think that would be a good idea that Five-ish take his share in the family business. Let him start by working an hour a day until he gets acquainted with the entire business. He is a clever young man, and he will eventually be able to lighten your burden quite considerably. Consider as well that eventually, after 120 years, it will be he who will have to take over the business. And so he might as well begin learning the business under your tutelage." The man listened to his wife's words, but disagreed thoroughly. "It's not fair for Tufaiva," she argued. "He agreed to marry our daughter on the condition that he would not be required to concern himself with business matters. It would be totally unfair to involve him in worldly affairs when he is so diligent and devoted to his study. That is, after all, much more important. The Talmud Torah keneged kulam. The study of Torah is equal to all else. How can I take him away from his studies?" Feivish's mother-in-law did not agree with Feivish's father-in-law on this, and the debate raged back and forth for many days. One day, Feivish's wife entered her parents' home to find her mother sitting and sobbing. "What's the matter, mother? Is everyone well? What's wrong? Why are you crying so bitterly?" The mother explained her feelings, describing her concern for the future of the family. She reviewed all her arguments while her daughter listened intently. "But mother," the daughter finally said, "you know that Feivish has not a minute to spare. He studies day and night, never wasting a minute. How could he possibly learn the business?" "Well," said the mother, "he need not assume complete responsibility at once. All I want is him to begin with an hour a day, that he become acquainted with the business." The daughter, seeing her mother's deep concern, promised to speak to Feivish about it and see what Feivish would think about this idea. The following day, when Feivish returned home from the Beis HaMedrash, his wife greeted him despondently. "Why are you so sad?" he asked his wife. And his wife told him about the conversation that she had had the previous day with her mother, and how her mother was concerned for the well-being of the family, and that she suggested that he begin to take an interest in the family business. And she too said, "Why don't you make it easier for my father and my mother by taking an interest in the business only for an hour a day?" Feivish, who was a true masmid and treasured his time of Torah study, at first violently refused. But the power of the evil inclination is so mighty, and the arguments were also quite persuasive, that he finally agreed. And so it was that Feivish began going to the store for an hour a day to begin learning the business. But even during this hour, he would immerse himself in a sefer and study all the while. The Samach Mem was not satisfied with the state of things, and so laid plans to tear Feivish away from his Torah study. "You scoundrel! You dirty thief!" were the words that Feivish heard one day as he sat in the store going over a sefer. An angry merchant had burst into the store, and now was accusing his father-in-law of dealing dishonestly. That person continued, "Don't think that this is the first time you've cheated me. I pay you in full each time for all the merchandise that I order, and then you go ahead and swindle me in the amount that you deliver," accused the enraged customer. The father-in-law opened the package, which was angrily placed before him on the counter, and was perplexed to see that his customer's accusation was quite valid. He checked the order. It was for a certain amount, and that which was sent was not the amount that was agreed upon. He knew that he himself was not to be accused of this because he was guiltless, and he went to the workers in his shipping department and began cross-examining them until he found the culprit who had been stealing the merchandise. Apologizing profusely to the merchant, Phivish's father-in-law settled the matter with him and then fired his dishonest thieving worker. Phivish, who was a witness and took in the whole scene, was very touched and moved by it. It had a very strong effect on Phivish. He realized now that what his wife had told him and that which the mother-in-law had said about the workers taking advantage of his father-in-law's advancing age and his lessened ability to oversee him, to oversee them, was quite true, and that they were stealing whenever his back was turned. And so Phivish decided that it was up to him to take a much more active interest in the business to prevent such unpleasant scenes in the future. And instead of coming an hour a day, Phivish started coming for 2 or 3 hours every day. And instead of holding open a safer and mostly looking in the safer and without paying too much attention to the comings and goings and the happenings in the business, Phivish became engrossed with the comings and goings of the laborers and the customers. His father-in-law was relieved to shed some of his responsibility and began to rely more and more on Phivish as he saw that Phivish was truly a capable young man and he was grasping all the facets of the business, that nobody now was stealing from under his nose, and that things were working in a much more effective and orderly manner. In fact, the profits had never been so good for quite a number of years since Phivish began to take an active interest in the business. Phivish, seeing that the present staff was used to corruption and that they could not be trusted, dismissed the whole lot of them and hired others to replace them, reorganizing the whole business. Thus it happened that when the father-in-law passed away, Phivish was left totally involved in financial affairs. By now, Phivish was spending the entire day at the store, and this left him virtually no time for Torah study, for not only was he busy during business hours, but afterwards he would have to spend time on the books, and so his time for study was very limited. He set aside, however, an hour in the morning before davening and another hour in the evening. But soon the business encroached even upon these precious hours. He found that during the business hours, he was totally taken up with his customers, and the accounts which he had to tend to took up the rest of his waking time, so that he really had no time to learn. And since he stayed up till all hours of the night pondering the accounts, Phivish was too tired in the mornings to adhere to a Torah schedule of 1 hour at least a day. Not only that, but his shacharis praying became increasingly hurried until he stopped davening with a minyan altogether. The business continued to prosper, and Phivish soon found it necessary to expand. This, of course, meant more responsibility and less free time. When Phivish was appointed the king's agent, the added burden left him with no time even for his prayers, or so he thought. On Shabbos, Phivish still managed to daven in shul, But soon he stopped this too, being so worn out from his strenuous efforts of the entire week. Five-ish would spend the entire day in bed, just recovering his strength for the week to come. Five-ish's position as an official supplier to the king once presented an excellent business opportunity to Five-ish. He was invited to the prime minister's home to sign a contract on a very large order. Since he felt it unseemly to appear as he was, he trimmed his beard, acquired different clothing, and went to keep his appointment. As he sat discussing business, the prime minister's wife entered with refreshments. Five-ish did not wish to insult his hostess and tasted one of the cakes that was placed before him. By way of compliment, he casually asked her what they were made of and was relieved to hear that they contained no trefa ingredients. And thereafter, when his affairs brought him to the prime minister's home again, he would partake of the refreshments without pangs of conscience. Little did Five-ish realize that the woman did in fact use lards and fats to enhance the flavor of her baking. Once Five-ish had become lax in his eating habits, he felt no compunction whatsoever about eating treif, eventually even bringing such food into his own home. His wife, distressed by Five-ish's downfall, was powerless to do anything. It pained and grieved her deeply to see the metamorphosis of her husband from a great Torah scholar to a totally uncaring Jew. But she no longer had any influence upon him and was forced to remain silent. Five-ish increased his godless ways, and they became apparent to the entire community. And thus it was that Five-ish acquired the name Five-ish, lowest of the low. The years passed, and Five-ish prospered. The time arrived for him to marry off his older daughter. Although he realized that he himself was a sinner, Five-ish desired the best for his daughter. He wanted a true Talmud Chacham and an upright and outstanding young man. But no one who knew Five-ish or had even heard of him would be likely to consent to become his son-in-law. And so he decided to take a business trip, combining it with a search for a suitable young man. He took along with him his talis and tefillin, though he had long ceased to use them. Five-ish traveled quite far, and his travels brought him to Hungary, where he stopped at a village. When he entered the shul in the village, he encountered a fine young student whose very face bespoke his greatness. Inquiring about the young man, he learned that he was the son of the local rabbi and head of the Besdin, the rabbinical court. After talking with the youth and becoming enamored of his fine qualities, Five-ish desired him as a son-in-law. Five-ish returned and summoned a shatran to him. He offered the shatran a substantial sum to go to the village in Hungary and transact the shidduch with the young man he had previously met. The shatran, who was not a scrupulous individual and was promised a large sum of money, accepted the project and set forth soon after, with the understanding, of course, that he would not reveal who Five-ish was. When the shatran, the marriage broker, reached the village, he went straight to the rabbi's home. Posing as a grain merchant, he said that business had brought him to Hungary, where he was required to remain for several weeks. Since he was very particular in his observance of kashrus, he begged the rabbi to accept him as a paying guest. The rabbi, who barely subsisted upon his meager salary, readily agreed to the arrangement. The marriage broker made himself very amenable and very friendly during his stay. He possessed a glib tongue, as Shatchanim do, and would entertain the whole household with amusing and interesting anecdotes. One day, he approached the rabbi with a suggestion. "I see that your son has already reached marriageable age," said the Shatchan. "Yes, that's true," said the rabbi. "Yes, indeed, he has had many offers for a shidduch. But they all require that we put up a large sum of money, which in our circumstances we cannot possibly afford." "Then," said the Shatchan, "I have just the thing for you. You see, before I left home, I was approached by a Talmud Chochem, a man Boki in Shas and Poiskim, a man who knew by heart the entire Talmud and all the law, who is extremely wealthy to the bargain. He told me that he was looking for his accomplished daughter to find for her a fine youth who would be willing to spend the rest of his days in Torah study. If I were to come across such a youth, he said to me, I should feel free to represent him and suggest the match. After having lived here for a while, I feel I know you both, the honorable father and the learned son. I think I know you well enough to feel that something might come out of my suggestion." The rabbi listened to his guest's words and agreed to meet with the father. The Shatchan immediately wrote to Fivish that the rabbi was amenable and that he was to come and make the rabbi's acquaintance. Fivish's trip took several weeks, but when he arrived, he did not arrive empty-handed. He was laden with expensive gifts for the entire family. Although his outward appearance did not make the most favorable impression, the Rebbetzin assumed that this wealthy businessman certainly came in contact with high officials and must therefore alter his appearance for their sake. But when the rabbi spoke to Fivish, he was truly amazed at his erudition in Torah knowledge. And so the rabbi saw that this man was truly a Talmud Chochem, for Fivish had not forgotten all that he had learned in the previous years before he changed his ways. The couple now desired to see the daughter, but Fivish convinced them to first announce the engagement. If his daughter did not meet up with their expectations, when she came with her father on his next business trip, the engagement would automatically be declared null and void. A feast was made to celebrate the joyous occasion. Many poor people were invited, and the chosen delivered a brilliant drosha. He delivered a brilliant speech. Fivish discussed several points, posing contradictions and resolving them with his vast knowledge. The chosen and his parents were very happy and eagerly awaited further developments. Fivish took leave of his future mechotanim, the future in-laws, again showering them with gifts. He promised to return soon after with his daughter. When he did return with her, she was approved of by the rabbi and his family. Fivish then suggested that they celebrate the wedding immediately. "Why must you be bothered by such a lengthy trip to our city? It's both tiring and expensive. How, too, do you propose to leave your city without its leader? Why not celebrate the wedding here and now, and then I will take the young couple back with me to their new home?" The rabbi agreed, and the wedding took place. Hundreds of people attended from the chosen side, but the Kala and her father were the only ones there to represent their side of the family. Fivish explained that they had few relations and that distance prevented their friends from attending. After the Sheva Brachas, after the 7 days of celebration following the wedding, Fivish and the young couple packed their things and set out for home. When they finally reached their destination, they were greeted by many servants who rushed to take in their things and make them comfortable. The young chosn was not accustomed to the splendor and wealth that was apparent all around him. They first entered a large courtyard lit up by many lanterns, surrounded by the orchards and gardens from where there emanated a mixture of delicious and heavenly fragrances. The rugs and tapestries that adorned the mansion within stunned the youth who had never seen such wealth in all his days. The chosn and kala were taken to their room to refresh themselves. Just as they made themselves comfortable, a knock was heard at the door. It was Fivish, who asked to speak several words with his new son-in-law. And this is what Fivish said to him. "I think it's only fair to inform you of certain things before you become a member of my household. I am known in these parts as Fivish, lowest of the low. This is because I transgress all the commandments of the Torah. I wish you to hear it first from me before you hear it from outsiders. You may accuse me of having deceived you, but first let me state my case. Even though I myself am no longer an observant Jew, I desire a pious and scholarly husband for my daughter. I will give you your own home, complete with new furniture and new dishes, and you need not have any contact with me at all. I agree to continue to support you for the rest of your days. If, however, you still wish to back out, you must give your wife a get, a bill of divorce immediately, and renounce all claims against me. Furthermore, you may keep all the gifts I have given you until now. But whatever you decide, I want that decision to be made by morning." How the young man handled this and what happened to the rest of Fivish's life in the coming installment.